Steuerung Alt entfernen, der Tech-Podcast des Bitkom.
Herzlich willkommen zu Steuerung Alt entfernen, dem Tech-Podcast des Bitkom. Heute nehmen wir einen ganz besonderen Podcast auf mit einem besonderen Thema und weichen auch vom normalen Podcast-Schema ab, was man vielleicht schon hier in der Anmoderation hört. Es geht heute um den russischen Angriffskrieg auf die Ukraine und darum, inwiefern insbesondere der IT-Sektor oder die IT-Branche davon betroffen ist. Denn die Ukraine gehört zu den größten Exporteuren von IT-Dienstleistungen weltweit. Bevor wir unsere Gäste vorstellen, einmal kurz zu uns. Mein Name ist Nina Paulsen und ich moderiere diesen Podcast zusammen mit Sebastian Klöß.
Hallo Nina.
Hi Sebastian. Und unsere Gäste heute sind Olha Sitnitschenko. Sie ist Head of International Relations bei der IT Ukraine Association, was der größte Verband von IT-Unternehmen in der Ukraine ist. Und mit dabei ist auch noch Orest Forhalla. Er ist Head of Alliances and Partnerships von NIX. Das ist ein Softwareentwickler in der Ukraine. So I think now it's time to switch to English to have our conversation. Olha, Orest, welcome to our podcast. It's great having you here.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. It's our pleasure.
Hello, Nina. Hi, Sebastian. Great to be with you.
So for someone living here safe in Germany and following the horrific news from the war in Ukraine, it's very difficult to imagine what daily life is like over there. Can you just give us a small insight?
Yes, definitely. The war has changed the usual style of living. But, you know, we as human beings, we are capable to adjust our settings, our basic settings to the environment that we are living. And therefore, I must say, there is a lot of work, even more than before, because most of us in IT industry, we do not only work, we also volunteer a lot. So besides the usual work and family stuff, you have the volunteering component, and you just need to be prepared to find some safe place and to make sure you're always in a safe place to be efficient at your work.
In which city do you live, Orest?
I live in Lviv. It's a city in western part of Ukraine. It's something like 70 kilometers from the EU-Poland border.
Okay, and you, Olha?
I live in Kyiv. Well, almost in Kyiv suburbs. It's like 1 kilometer from the city. And I absolutely agree with Orest. Though, frankly speaking, lately we've been not responsible enough to go to the shelter every time we can hear the air raid alarm. But we definitely go to the corridors, for example, because, you know, like there is that Israel like expertise, something like this, and they say that there should be like two walls for you to be like sort of safe. So we use this role and generally just go to the corridor, and it's quite cool for us. You just, I don't know, grab your laptop and continue working over there.
And actually there is a new added component of our usual life that's checking the news feed quite frequently to find out that some of your friends or acquaintances have joined armed forces and are fighting for our freedom. And sometimes you find out that those people have died, and some of my acquaintances have died already on the battlefield. Therefore, we all should be mindful of this extremely high price paid by people of Ukraine, by Ukrainian armed forces, for us to have this relatively normal life and be able to keep on working. And that's actually the main motivator for us to continue on working and volunteering, donating our funds to support the Ukrainian army.
I'm incredibly thankful to everyone who is now fighting for our freedom and protecting Ukraine.
Orest, you already mentioned that business is going on. How is business going on? I think, can you work in your office as you used to work a couple of months ago, or what has changed actually?
Yeah, thanks for the good question, Sebastian. Actually, business is going well. And regarding going to the office, I think we had a great exercise, if we may call it so, called COVID pandemics, which prepared us, you know, to be away from the office and to get used to our remote work.
So it's in times of war, it didn't change a lot comparing to pandemic times. So we still are able to meet in the office, and that's what we do approximately once a week, to see each other, to see the teammates, to network. But the whole work goes from home offices, and yeah, those home offices, they can look a bit different now. For example, I live in a multi-story building with a lot of apartments, and we have the underground parking, and that's the place where we have set up, you know, a place where we can take a meeting. We installed the Wi-Fi there, so we can take meetings even if it's the air strike alarm. And that's the change that the war, the active phase of the war, actually brought to us.
Which means that you have changed your home office from the flat into the parking lot where you're safer.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes use the car parked there as a personal meeting room. But still, you have some perks because you can meet with your neighbors, finally meet them in person to know their names, have a coffee with them. And that's another positive change that happened.
And Ola, how has your work changed maybe or hasn't changed at all?
Well, it has changed for sure. And I absolutely once again agree with Zarist because finally you know your neighbors. And it happened that one of my neighbors is an employee of the association member. Another one also is working in tech. So like, now in the evenings, walking with our dogs, we just communicate about some tech stuff, you know. So it's quite cool that, you know, you're like the guys you lived with like for years and you know them better right now. It's like from this part, considering the work process itself, definitely COVID was something that gave us this easiness to work from home. Yes, and this ability. So it's quite okay. The one thing that's changed, like, I don't know, in a huge way, it's probably the working time. Because when the war began, we definitely worked without any weekends. Because, like, first of all, it was like some urgent needs yet to deal with some stuff, to help some other people and so on. And then it just, like, it's not from 9 to 6 or like from 8 to 5. It's like we are having, I don't know, working meetings on Saturdays, Sundays, and at 8 p.m.
So, and how is the whole IT industry doing right now?
Oh, you know, quite well, definitely. Because, first of all, probably because most of the companies had BCPs, I mean, business continuity plans. Yes, I wouldn't say that all of us were ready for the war, like, as it is, like, with all the, I don't know, bombardments and so on. But we all, like, were observing the Russian troops near our borders, and definitely the industry was preparing, not only the industry, yeah, but the country itself. So people know what to do. Some of these stuff were really catered to the European countries and not only before the war. Yes, but even when the war began, lots of stuff was really catered to Western regions, to Central regions. Or how is it in NX?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Olha. It's hard to say it, but we can say still that it went as planned. So we had this business contingency plan in place. We were never thinking we will have to implement it so fast or at all. But when the outbreak, the active phase started, we made a lot of efforts to, first of all, ensure safety of our people. So that was the first priority. And coming back to your previous question, how is the working day? So now when we have over 100 days of the war, the usual business day looks as I described previously. But if you take a look at the first 2-3 weeks, it's all was about making sure there is safety of our people. For example, we were relocating our contractors from eastern parts of Ukraine, and we have contractors in 22 regions of Ukraine. So that was a big effort to, and we relocated almost 600 people to western part of Ukraine, and also part of them moved further to Poland. But at those 3 weeks, it was also about ensuring having proper internet connection. We were fortunate to get the Starlink devices, and that's how tech helped us, you know, to overcome this situation. Actually, those devices are still in a mode as a reserve internet connection, and the internet connection at this moment in Ukraine is very stable. But in general, those 3 or 4 weeks of the beginning of the active phase, they were the most difficult ones.
Mm. So you were pretty much prepared, but still it was difficult in the beginning, so to say. Yeah? You've already said that you had to move quite a lot of your workers within Ukraine. How many workers do you have, or how many people are working at your business?
So NIX is a company of 1,800 people, and we are growing fast. So last year, our year-over-year growth was 60%. And this year, we entered the year with our ambitious plans and targets. Obviously, the growth cannot be so rapid, but we are still growing. And in the wartime, 100 people joined NIX. So we are approaching the 2,000 people mark for our company.
Maybe it's a bit a naive question from someone who is in safe Germany. Do all these men and women are in your offices, don't they have to fight maybe?
Actually, not at all. So if you take a look at our company precisely, so as mentioned, 1,800 people, and maybe just a small portion of them is currently called to the army. And called to the army does not always mean you are on the battlefield, on the very front line. So we have approximately 20 people who are in the armed forces of Ukraine from NIX contractors, but a big part of them is still in a training mode or in a support mode. They are helping to supply goods for the army and contributing also with their IT skills, because IT admins and networking professionals are also required on the modern battlefields.
I would add here that, like, if we're talking about the industry overall, yes, the IT Ukraine Association launched research, and according to these results, 3% of tech professionals in Ukraine joined armed forces, and 9% joined cyber forces. So yeah, like, it's not like all men or all female are in the front right now. Like, we don't even, I don't know, have such much weapon. So yeah, like, not at all. Fine. Well, we do have a lot of stuff to continue working. Like, in the end of previous year, there were about 285,000 tech specialists. So only 3% of them joined the armed forces. So definitely there's still huge talent pool in Ukraine.
Olha, maybe you can tell us a little bit about the IT Ukraine Association. So what are you doing and who are your members?
Yeah, for sure. IT Ukraine Association is the largest professional tech association. Yes, so association for tech companies in Ukraine. We represent the interest of more than 77,000 tech specialists that are employees of more than 100 of our member companies. And usually we had, I don't know, like, been providing support in, like, government relations, in PR, in international activities. But with the war, like, since it began, we have also, like, launched some assistance services. Like, for example, Yes Support. It's a service, like, where our members, and not only our members, yeah, because we also had some requests from the companies that are not the association's companies. So, like, all those requests were about the relocation, yeah, with some other stuff, about mobilization, I don't know, like, crossing the border, and so on. So, like, since the war began, we have been providing support not only in, you know, like tech stuff, but also in some more like CSR stuff. And of course, we do some CSR projects with our companies, educational projects, because Ukraine generally puts a lot of effort on the education, like in all of like in all the varieties of this.
Mm-hmm. And one of your members is NIX, Orest.
For sure.
Orest, can you tell us a little about your company?
Yes, gladly. And we are a proud board member of IT Ukraine Association. And in general, we see our contribution to associations, professional associations, and local clusters as part of our corporate social responsibility. Therefore, it's worth mentioning that we are also a founding member of Lviv IT Cluster, which unites companies in our western part of the country. And NIX is the company that has been 20 years on the market. This year we planned some big celebration, but we will definitely postpone it after the victory. And we are serving customers across the globe with our software development outsourcing services. And having offices not only in Ukraine, but also in Poland, Bulgaria, and our representative offices in Sweden, other parts of Europe, and also in Miami, in North America, that well reflects the nature of our business. So we help businesses to perform their digital transformation. And also worth mentioning that we are working with customers in DACH region. So big Fortune 100 companies also from Germany are among our customers and other global businesses. And here I would definitely highlight our expertise in logistics and manufacturing. And the services we are delivering, that's obviously custom software development, quality assurance and testing, a lot of cloud native services, and data and analytics is what we do, and special niche expertise that we have for embedded IoT, SAP consulting, and open text services. And also VR and game development studio is part of our organization. So it's a quite large portfolio that we have built up during those years.
You've mentioned that you're working with quite a lot of different companies. Is there anything other companies can do to help you, or what help would you wish from companies in Germany, for example?
The biggest help we can get is keeping on providing workloads to our engineers, providing work to Ukrainian IT companies, because that will help not only the company by itself, but all the people who work there still to generate their income, to support their families in this difficult time. Because in the IT industry is one of those industries that can work remotely and generate income, pay taxes in Ukraine, and those taxes will also help our country to succeed and to win this war. So my biggest wish to German companies and to companies in the region, please work with Ukrainian IT providers. So you will be surprised with the quality, but also you will make a contribution to help us succeed in those difficult times. And especially now, if you enter into a relationship, you can make it even more stronger. So if you support the company in this difficult time, I'm pretty sure it will pay you off in more easier times with multipliers.
And Ola, can you add a wish from your perspective as an association maybe?
Well, I was thinking what to add actually, and Orest is absolutely right, like is absolutely correct, because right now what we need the most are the contracts, yeah, like the business itself, because definitely like many people have fled the country, including the tech specialists, yeah, but still they're working for Ukrainian tech companies, and it's crucial because like working, they are earning money, they're paying taxes to Ukrainian budget. And so this money are used then, yeah, to to keep our army working, to buy some stuff that is needed for them. So working here helps fight in Russia on a daily basis, for sure. So this probably is the main part. And some additional one is stop doing business with Russia, because this way goes over there, doing business with them, they earn money, they pay taxes that goes to their budget to kill Ukrainians afterwards. To prevent this, we'd say, hey, there are many other countries who provide tax services. There is Ukraine. So instead, go to find Ukrainian tech provider on our website itukraine.org.ua. We have a list with our member companies. All of them are reliable partners. Yes, there are many other companies, many other countries, but like not Russia, because really it just fulfills their ability to keep on fighting, to keep on and doing all that horrible stuff. So stop business with Russia, encourage your friends to do so. By the way, we have launched an initiative, a website, stopbusinesswithrussia.today. So go over there, go find your company, the company you're a customer of, and find out whether they have stopped all their operations with Russia or no, and encourage them to do so.
Are there any examples of help you have received that is good to let people know about, maybe?
There are so many examples of support, actually, from the very beginning of the war, in all kind of possible activities and possible processes. Starting from the donations to the army, to the humanitarian aid, considering doing business with Ukrainian companies, giving social media platforms and just some media platforms to share this information, to share the truth, to share the current affairs of the tech market of Ukraine. And of course, lots of help, not only to the tech market, but like generally to Ukraine, to the refugees, to those who suffered, to Ukrainian cities. Like we can continue naming them, I don't know, for hours. So I would just ask to continue doing so, because I do understand that it's been already 3 months, even more, of the war, and people are getting tired of this, to hear this, to see those horrible pictures. But when you just turn away from this, it's not that it's not going to happen. It's just you don't see this anymore. But it's still over there, and people still do suffer. So what I'd say that please continue this support. Please continue supporting business, because through business, we can make our impact, and you can make your impact, and stop this war altogether, and make it back to normal, to develop our businesses, to develop our industries, because we all know that in synergy, we can reach much better results. This cooperation will be mutually beneficial, and it is mutually beneficial. So just continue doing so and join this move.
Yes, and I would definitely add that we are extremely thankful to our existing customers, and also the customers we are not keeping an active relationship currently, that they supported us. They supported NIX people, and they supported the company and different causes that we collected funds for with their donations. And we received those words of support, that money from across the globe, and we keep on receiving it. And we are really thankful to everyone who contributed and still is contributing. And that's really important to keep the pace, because we have an active war phase still going and should not forget about it.
Maybe we can go ahead with another topic. Maybe we can talk a little bit about technologies and what role technologies play during those challenging times of the war. Do you have something to share with us?
Well, definitely, like 10 years ago, it wouldn't be this easy. Yeah, I believe Orest couldn't be sitting in his parking and having meetings with all that stuff. Definitely, it's much easier. Like something that I've experienced, for example, we have DIA. It's a governmental service. Like with your digital ID card, passport, COVID certificate, and so on. And when the war began, it was very comfortable. You definitely need to grab a passport wherever you go. But if you forget one, you have your cell phone. So you just open it up, you show it in the blog post. And you can go further. And the same goes like with the driving license. So yeah, those are like little things that make your life easier, at least somehow. Yeah. So it's about something general. And if we're talking about work, I believe that like current technologies we have made it possible, because like I don't think it would be able to proceed in these circumstances, like, I don't know, in 90s or somewhere there. Or is, what do you think?
Definitely agree with you. So the first one is great internet connection that we have, plus the additional support we gained so quickly from Elon Musk's Starlinks, which covered the big territory of Ukraine, and those spots where the bombs were hitting the train stations. For example, our company purchased several Starlink devices and transferred them to Ukrainian railways authority, and they placed that on this train station, and people got the connectivity to the internet so they could inform, "I'm in safety." And that's really important. But also, besides the usual working life, I think the technology is really deeply involved into this war, because we have the cyber war going on as well. So the informational attacks, the cyber threats, and also we have technology which is used on the battlefield. So for example, we have a lot of drones used in this war. And I think in the next history books that our children will be reading, there will be a big chapter about those modern technologies used on the battlefield. And we cannot overestimate the influence of the technology, both on our life during the wartime and also the war actions by itself.
Do you can give some examples for technologies on the battlefield?
The two examples that I can provide, one of them is the NGO called Aerorozvitka. It was actually mentioned by The Guardian recently. They do develop their custom drones, which are used on the battlefield. And those drones, they are partly manufactured in Ukraine. They have special software inside it. And what is good about them, they do not only observe the territory and provide the precise data about location for the artillery, but also they can drop small packages. So deliver presents, as we call them, to our enemies. And those are really small bombs, but they can still make an impact on the battlefield, especially if you use several of those drones. And the second example is the website called Damage in UA. That's the website that helps everybody who got their apartment or their house bombed or damaged in other way during the war, to report it and to collect this data. So this website was created with guidance of our state authorities, and they are making sure to collect this data as early as possible to keep the records. And then later, when we win this war, there will be the process of claiming those damages from Russia, and definitely this data will be helping. And I think it's the first war ever when we could collect the data, this data live. And that's another advantage of technology used. And yeah, a lot of analytics can be definitely made later. And let's hope there will be as less data as possible, but still we can work with what we have.
Yeah, another example can be that face recognition application and its usage for different purposes. Yeah, like firstly from, you know, something like there was a video recording of Russian soldiers in Belarus sending all they took from Ukrainian houses, like, I don't know, like washing machines and so on. So they were sending it back home. And there was a camera in that post office. So then it was like face recognition was applied to this footage. Yeah, and lots of them were identified. So that's why people can understand who was there in Bucha and so on. But it's not only about alive people, yeah, those who are still living, but it also helps a lot to identify the bodies of Russian soldiers and then to find their relatives. Once again, to say them that they can come here to Ukraine and grab them home and to tell their neighbors not to send soldiers over here.
Thank you very much for giving us these insights. We are reaching the end of our podcast today. And I have to thank you again for giving us these insights. I think we've learned quite a lot today, that despite the terrible war, large parts of business life, of daily life is going on in Ukraine. That you are very creative in finding new ways to work, even the parking lot, and that you are finding great ways to stay alive. And I wish you all the best, and above all, stay safe.
Thank you very much, both.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Thank you for having us and having this possibility to share the real life experience. I think and hope it will be interesting to your listeners and will pour some light on the actual status of affairs in Ukraine.
Yeah, thanks a lot. If you or your listeners have any questions, please feel free to contact us, like me or Orest on LinkedIn or whatever. And do not hesitate to work with Ukrainian tech companies.
Thanks again. Und nun mache ich auf Deutsch wieder weiter. Ja, liebe Zuhörerinnen, liebe Zuhörer, vielen Dank fürs Zuhören heute von dieser besonderen Folge von Steuerung Alt Entfernen. Und alle Informationen zu dieser Folge und den anderen Folgen gibt es auf bitkom.org/mediathek/podcasts. Bis zum nächsten Mal.
Das war Steuerung Alt Entfernen, der Tech-Podcast des Bitkom. Weitere Folgen findet ihr auf www.bitkom.org/podcasts.